you wind up in LA because your friend told you to come here. Can you stop? You know you've got to stop eating sugar. You're allergic to the stuff. You can't. Can you stop eating on your own power? You turn the statements into questions. That's basically the method that we're talking about here. And so I'm sitting there with a sponsee, taking them through the book, turning the statements into questions. How many of you have been in OA less than 5 years? Really, a lot. No wonder you're at this. Everybody else is listening to the speakers. You made a good choice, by the way. Of those who have been under 5 years, how many of you have already heard the slogan, there's a difference between a religion and a spiritual program? Have you heard that yet in meetings? One, two. Well, they always used to say that. There's not a religion, it's a spiritual program. Well, have you ever had anybody explain you the difference? Well, aren't you glad you're here? Because you're about to hear the difference. First, the first thing is, let's not be disingenuous. We have in common with organized religions the fact that we talk about a higher power. Okay? Doesn't have, you don't have to use the G word or Jesus or Moses or Muhammad, whatever. But we talk about finding a higher power, and we're talking about a non-human spiritual power to tap into. So we have that in common with organized religions, and let's not pretend we don't. And that's all we got in common. Everything else is different. We got no leaders, popes, Lutheran synods, board of rabbis, board of presbyters, National Baptist Council. Nobody can make you come here. Nobody can excommunicate you. Nobody can tell you what to do or shun you. Okay? We have no dues or fees. We don't have churches. I was thrown out of a Catholic church in Paris once by the priest. I showed up looking for a meeting on the wrong day, and he thought I was a homeless bum looking to crash in his bathroom, so he threw me out. He's protecting the property of the church. I didn't get mad at him because it was my mistake. I showed up at the wrong day. But the biggest difference between an organized religion and a spiritual program is they're going to tell you who God is. And they're usually going to add stuff like, we got the only right one, they got the wrong one, and they deserve to have their heads cut off because they got the wrong one. They're going to war with each other over who's got the right God. The big book says it's impossible to define or comprehend that which is God. We don't tell you what God is. We say you need one, go out and get one. That's the biggest difference between a religion and a spiritual program. You need a higher power, go out and get one. And fortunately, we got a way to do it. The point is, how many times have you heard that? Thousands of times. The point is we're willing to grow along the spiritual line. God could have won if he were sought. Doesn't say found, sought. You, if you have enough power to get through those steps honestly and make those amends, okay, you may wind up saying you're an agnostic, but you're going to be an abstinent one, okay, and you'll be relieved of your obsession. If you can stay open to seeking a higher power, you can make this program. But you need one. We're not going to tell you who or what it is. You're a feminist? Well, congratulations. You got a feminine higher power. You know, you believe in the forces of nature out there? Okay, well, you got a natural higher power. The book is humble. If you find a book thumper beating you over the head, just tell them to piss off. But the book is humble. Do not let any prejudice you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. If the God that, you know, if your father was a drunk and abused you on Saturday night and maybe even tried to molest you and then drag you to church on Sunday, I think you might have a little bit of a bad vibe on organized religion, or at least the ones you're... We get that here. Don't let those prejudices deter you. You can ask yourself what these terms mean to you. Okay? The greatest chapter in the book, We Agnostics. Bill was described himself as an agnostic. It's We Agnostics, not You Agnostics. Okay? Oh, some great stuff in the OA Reader. Did I bring my OA Reader? I thought I did. Oh, there's the Bill sees it. And where's my OA Reader? Shit. Anybody have a foot today with them, Angels? No? You do? Great. Here's the Bill sees it. My primary responsibility is proper presentation of the program. Page 105 of Bill sees it. Great stuff from the OA Reader. My favorite reader. Better, I like it much better than the AA Reader. It's great. January 17th, we should take care not to make the intellect our God, Albert Einstein. My mind can easily get in my way. It tries to be logical. It figures out problems and thinks it has answers. Tries to figure out how to connect speakers. See, the mind is good for that, although in this case, it failed. Then my life becomes chaotic. It is only when I let go and let God that I feel serenity. It is only when I give up and see the answers God puts before me. It is only when I stop trying to control that my life goes smoothly. God runs my life better than I do. I must remember to stay out of the way. For today, I accept whatever is put before me. The point is, this is January 17th, and February 1st was great, too. That was, I read that recently, and I thought, you know, I'm going to mention that at this workshop. He loseth nothing, February 1st, he loseth nothing that keepeth God for his friend, page 32. Many who enter OA are about as receptive to the idea of having God as a friend as they would be to the suggestion that they levitate for an hour or so every day. We understand how some people come in the program. We get that, because you got a problem with the G word. A story in the book, O Readers Anonymous, I don't have that with me, tells about a newly arrived member, an atheist, who on hearing the suggestion to act as if God were real, worried about being a hypocrite. What do you mean, pray? I don't believe in anything. This is ridiculous. I'll tell you a story. Oh, heaven forbid, replied his sponsor. You could be a glutton, a thief, an egomaniac, vicious in every way. You could smell bad, look bad, but by God, we don't want you to be a hypocrite. Listen to Harlan's story. He's dying of cellulitis in the leg, and, you know, he smells it. The man became willing to follow directions, found a higher power of his understanding, lost all his excess weight, and is still recovering in a way more than 12 years later. For today, there is nothing to lose in seeking the God of my understanding except my false pride, my food obsession, my fat, and all the light-destroying illusions that this illness breeds. February 1st, great quote. Really good. So what I'm getting at is, the atheists and agnostics are always worried about being hypocrites. It's intellectual pride. You're worried about being a hypocrite. You're an Alcoholics Anonymous, for Christ's sakes. You're a liar, a cheat, and a thief. You tell your boss to be back in 2 hours. You show up 5 days later. Your wife's looking for you for the alimony. There's two warrants out for you. You told the judge you'd never drive drunk again, and now you're here. You're worried about being a hypocrite if you pray. You know, this is bullshit. It's intellectual pride, but they can't see it. I'm very familiar. I know. There's a real agnostic group in Santa Monica that I attend regularly. Why would a guy like me attend it? Several reasons. Number one, the God I found is like the feeling I have for a friend. It says that in the big book. I'm glad to see a lot of those people there, Jimmy C. And a few. They're really good people. They're very bright people. They do try and help newcomers. They're good people. Okay? That's one reason. Second reason, it's an interesting meeting. You know, they invite all different kinds of people. I've spoken there many times. People who are book thumpers spoken there. They don't just limit it to agnostics and atheists. Third reason, there's something in the 12 concepts of service that says the majority opinion should be heard. I think that's a good, valid spiritual concept. Sure, let them, you know, but I also see what's wrong with them. They think they're a bunch of free thinkers. They're not. They have tremendous prejudice and intellectual pride against spiritual concepts. The book doesn't tell you who to believe and what to believe. It just says, keep an open mind. It just says, I'll get to the second step promises. It says, ask yourselves honestly what these spiritual terms mean to you. If you don't believe in an anthropomorphic God, guess what? You don't have an anthropomorphic God. If you don't believe in a judgmental God, guess what? You don't have a judgmental God. If you're a feminist because your father molested you, guess what? You can have a feminine higher power. Just ask yourselves what these terms mean to you. Don't let prejudice keep you out of here. This is the thing that pisses off agnostics more than anything else. If you think you're an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. The reason it pisses them off is because you don't talk down to alcoholics or compulsive overeaters. They don't take well to it. The book tells you in Working for Others, you never talk down to a compulsive overeater or an alcoholic. And they thought Bob was patronizing them. He wasn't. You know why he said that? And remember I said certain things are different now, like lend him his book. In those days, they thought if you didn't believe in God, you were going to die. The truth is, in 2011, if you go to Tuesday night, 7 p.m., 1515 Maple in Santa Monica, you're going to see a room full of people, half of whom claim to be atheists or agnostics, and some have been sober 20 years. You don't have to be a theist to survive in the program. Now, survive and sobriety versus recovery, that's a different story. Because one of the other things, some of the three things I noticed about that group is they are not free thinkers. They have a lot of prejudice against spiritual terms. There's a lot of anger there, and they like to pretend it's organized religion, but it's not. It's really the G word. It just pisses them off that they think people are trying to convert them. And the third thing is 9 out of 10 of them have been so depressed or had psychotropic disorders in recovery that they've had to have medication to stay alive, to keep from killing themselves. And I'm not against doctors and medication. But I'm saying, why the hell would I want to spend thousands of dollars on shrinks and Prozac when I can buy an $8 big book, get one of these fanatics from the Tuesday night book thumpers and go through the steps again? I mean, I'm too cheap to be an agnostic is what it boils down to. I find it financially, you know, daunting. So the truth of the matter is that things are different today. They don't like real alcoholic because they're not real alcoholic, or they are real alcoholic and they won't work a spiritual program and they get all effed up in recovery or in sobriety, because sober is not recovery, and they wound up totally on, you know, they have to need medical help to save their lives. And I'm glad they're good doctors and psychologists. You never put down a good doctor or psychologist, quote from the book, because they'd be dead otherwise, or they'd be drinking. But things are different. When Dr. Bob said that, he wasn't trying to patronize him. He was trying to say, like, I think you're going to die if you don't stay open to God. And he believed it. He wasn't trying to talk down to him. See, it's their anger. Let's see. Lay out the steps in the book. Oh, yeah. These things are aged. The book requires no authentication. It was meant, theoretically, to be read on your own, and you could do it and recover. It was, but people were meant to work with others using the book. It's in the book. It's in there. But why would people go to the 12 and 12 and 12 instead of the big book? It's very simple. 12 and 12. Step 1 is in chapter 1. Step 2 is in chapter 2. Step 3 is in chapter 3. Oh, this must be the way to do it. The book requires a little understanding. There's a circle and triangle. This is Dan S.'s Big Book Awakening Guide. He's one of the local thumpers. It's not necessary, but I find it helpful because it helps me clarify things for newcomers. Here you have the way the steps are laid out in the book. Step 1 is all the way from the preface on to just about to the end of page 52 through more about alcoholism and parts of We Agnostics. Step 2 is in We Agnostics, chapter 4, see? It's a little more confusing than the 12 and 12, isn't it? Step 3 and 4 are in How It Works. Step Into Action, which is chapter 6, is steps 5 and 11. Working with Others is in chapter 7. That's step 12 is in chapter 7. So it helps to know where the steps are laid out in the book, okay? And it helps to have somebody who's had an experience, a vital spiritual experience, psychic change, vast rearrangement and displacements of ideas. If that's happened to this person and he knows how to use the book, and you're sitting there in front of him, he'll take you through the book. What this group taught me, and I've been hanging out with them for about 7 years, I'd say. I was 25 years sober and 25 years abstinent when I first came in contact with them. But I'm a self-centered compulsive overeater. I'm a self-centered alcoholic. I got the big book on my own, so I assume that, you know, I won't lend it to them. You know, read a copy of the book and get back to me with questions. They were right. I was wrong. At least if I'm sitting there with the guy in front of me and I'm turning the statements into questions, he's going to know that step 1 starts in the doctor's opinion. He's not going to jump to chapter 5, How It Works. What? Oh, How It Works. Let me jump to chapter 5, right? I'm going to explain the circle and triangle. I'm going to explain the doctor's opinion, a little AA history, okay? and show him that what step one is all about, and I'm going to turn the statements into questions. So he's going to have this interactive experience with me, you see? And that's the method that I've been using now for about 7 years, and it's fantastic. Because the worst thing that happens, and I've had three of them drink again, four of them, one of them's missing in action. He's a junkie too. Seriously deranged individual. That's in the book, by the way. We're deranged. It says that in the book. The worst that happens is the guy's exposed to the program. I stay sober. I stay abstinent. He might not, but I do. Okay? And the worst that happens is he at least knows where the goddamn program is. You know? So rather than give him the book and say, get back to me with questions, he's not, you know, if he's five, he doesn't know what he's reading. He's got all this prejudice against spiritual terms. I don't start him with chapter, I start him at the beginning, you know. Turning statements into questions. I don't use the set-aside prayer. It's a good prayer, but I made my own right from the book. I said, God, help me lay aside, this is all quotes from the big book. God, help me lay aside prejudice, even against organized religion, to stay willing, honest, and open for a new and deeper and more effective spiritual experience with my spiritual advisor or sponsor. They don't even use the word sponsor in the book. They use the word spiritual advisor. So I made my own set-aside prayer. Set-aside prayer is just what the book thumpers like it. To me, it's just alien prayer because it's not in the book. It's just saying, help me lay aside prejudice and set aside old ideas and stay open. So it's a valid spiritual prayer. Remember I said some slogans are valid. It's a very valid prayer. It's like, stay open. Now, did we already get through step two? I can't believe I jumped to it. Oh, this is just an aside. People will say there's no rules in the program. Well, you better take a look at the book. The book talks about a few simple rules and a few simple requirements. This is the requirement for step three, by the way. Page 60. The first requirement is that we may be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. If you still think you want to run the show, it's going to be hard for you to let a higher power into your life. Okay? It's a requirement for recovery, not just abstinence or sobriety, recovery. Oh, that was on page 60. Now, this guy, Barefoot Bill, he's an AA guy, AA history nut like me. He's got this list of 103 forms of imperative muster we found it necessary, other forms of the imperative in the big book. Here are a few. I simply had to believe in the spirit of the universe who knew neither time nor limitation. I must turn in all things to the Father of light who presides over us all. That's from Bill's story. Particularly as an imperative to work with others, page 14. You don't have to. By the way, this is a file on my computer. I can email this to you. I can attach it to an email. You know, so you don't have to do all this grunt work that I did. I'll give you that. It's royslove@verizon.net. I don't have a pen. Roy S. Love, royslev@verizon.net. Yeah. royslev@verizon.net. And you email me and I'll attach you this guide, and then it has page numbers and thanks, Jim. Our very lives are thus problem. Compulsive overeaters depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may help their needs. I'm sitting there with a guy 30-something years sober, taking him through the book. He's an AA guy. And I don't know. He's got a word problem, but I don't know. He's been to an OA meeting with me. He really liked it. He said, this is just like an AA meeting. No shit. And he may have a word problem. I don't think he's one of us. He's a heavy eater, but the book would call a heavy eater. There's a difference between a heavy. A heavy eater can stop or moderate if given sufficient incentive to do so. You know, physical, the doctor, his wife's going to leave him, the boss is going to fire him. You know, he can't sleep at night, he's got apnea. He may be able to stop or moderate on his own power. I asked this guy, I turned the statement into question. Do you think your very life as an alcoholic depends upon your constant thought of others and how you might help meet their needs? He goes, no. So at this point, what you do is you turn the statement around and said, oh, you think thinking about yourself all the time will help you in your recovery from alcoholism? So if they answer no, you turn it around. But the point is, we're not there to spin it or influence them. We want to honestly answer this. The guy who doesn't believe this doesn't believe this. Look at these other musts. We must find a spiritual basis of life. not just a thin basis of life, but a spiritual basis of life. Almost none of us like the self-searching, loving, pride, confession, should requires for successful. There is nothing left for us but to pick up, etc. It's only by fully disposing ourselves and our problems that we may be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Okay, now, there's 103 of them. Barefoot Bill's the kind of guy who would compile this shit. It's my kind of guy. All right. Slight quick mention. You go into an AA meeting, and an OA meeting sometimes, right? You see the steps on the wall or in the banners. Do we have banners in OA too? Yeah, we do. Okay. These are what the books calls, these are the steps that summarize the program. Summarize the program. The How It Works, Chapter 5, we read it at the meetings. You know the traditions? I don't know if this is true of OA, but in AA there's a long form and a short form. Is that true in OA too? And of course, alcoholics being what they are, the short form of tradition 2 is actually two words longer than the long form, but that's, you know, we're here because we're not on. But the point is there's a short form and a long form of traditions. Well, there's a short form of the steps, which are doing the steps off the wall, off the banners. And there's a long form. Like, if you do the step one, we literally were powerless over food and our lives were unmanageable. Or powerless over compulsive reading, you know. What does the book say? Where's step one in the book? Jerry's been around a long time. Where is it? Harlan?
Page 44.
All right.
I could
have
said that.
Actually, it's page 30, Harlan.
Page 44, first paragraph.
44? All right, let me get a fourth edition. Huh? No, wait a second now. 44. Harlan, I'm sorry, buddy. This is where I got 32 years in. It's on page 30. And this is the first step in the book. On page 30, and I will read it to you, Harlan, and I'll show it to you if you don't believe me. Okay? Here, the short form is, we may be powerless over food and our lives are unmanageable. Count the words? I don't know. I can't count them. I don't have the banner. Here's the long form. We learn, page 30, we learn that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were compulsive overeaters. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, normal people, or presently maybe, this time it'll be different, must be smashed. So for every step on a wall, there's a long form in the book. And you don't know that. Except now you do. So email me. Because I got it all here. Okay? Okay, step one. These are questions. First, they're called the considerate. Book Funker methods are about turning the statements into questions. We call them the considerations or realizations. For instance, if I'm sitting with one of you guys in front of me going through the work the first time, does the doctor's theory to have an allergy to certain foods, sugar, etc., interest me? Are you bodily and mentally different from others, from normies? That's page 30. Do you experience the phenomenon of craving? Okay? Now I screwed it up. Is that right? Phenomenon of craving. Well, maybe, I don't know. Maybe it's phenomena. Is it a phenomena?
N.
Phenomenon? Like this?
Yeah,
ah, you are right. Okay. Can I safely ingest sugar or other sugar food in any form at all? Do I overeat because I like the effect produced by stuffing myself with a binge food? You see, you turn the statements into questions. And the guy saying yes, you're doomed. Oh, I didn't mention this. I don't know if I skipped this or what. One of the greatest lines in the big book is on page 18. Maybe it's 26. Hold on. I can do a search for this. That's why I like computers. By the way, I got... let's see. Yes. It's on page 18. I was right. The purpose of this volume is to inform and comfort you. It says something like, we hope this volume will inform and comfort those who are afflicted, is what I think it really says. Is it affected? Yeah, okay. I shouldn't quote off at my butt. We hope this rhyme will inform and comfort those who are or who may be affected. There are many. Are you affected by compulsive overeater? Does this information give you, are we giving information here? Is this comforting you? Now, here's the funny part about it. This is why he brought it up. The information you get from the first step of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, in applying to compulsive overeaters, alcoholics, drug addicts, is not very comforting. Do you know what the information is from the first step of the big book? It's not like, oh, just don't eat and go to meetings, everything's going to be all right. Make sick. The information you get from the big book in the first step section is, you're doomed. You're like a man who has lost his legs. You'll never grow the new ones. It gets worse, never better. It's a progressive disease. You know, one of the questions, let me get back up there. Now I lost my place, of course. Maybe not. But one of the questions you ask is, are you a compulsive overeater of the hopeless variety? If you want to hear, listen to his tapes, and you'll hear, right? He was a compulsive overeater of the hopeless variety. That's why his story is so good. I've been mentioning you, Harlan. I've been giving you a lot of credit and telling people to get your tapes, which I do. I have his tape. I bought it last year. Let's see here. Where the hell was I? I'm running around with computers. All righty. Yeah, I'm back there. I'm getting back to where I was. I'm not worried about the material. I know this shit, man, I've been doing this a long time. But I'm just worried about time management. All right. Well, these are the considerations. I don't even think I should be reading every one of them. You get the picture? And there's considerations for every part of the book and every step. And the crucial considerations. Look at the, here's information for the first step. Okay? The purpose of this volume to inform and comfort. Much has been written pro and con, but among physicians, the general opinion seems to be that most chronic compulsive overeaters are doomed. That's your first information you get. But then we hit you with comfort. There is a solution. You know, yeah, happy, joyous, free. Okay, this is talking about first edition level drunks here. I attended a patient that had been a competent businessman, was an alcoholic type, coming about as hopeless. Do you consider yourself a hopeless compulsive overeater? How many fat farms you been? How many diets? How many shot doctors? These are hopeless. These are low bottom guys, and that's why they had a higher rate of recovery back then, because they weeded out the weak sisters. You know, the book thumpers have this slogan. It's not in the books, okay? It says, if God scares them out of this meeting, the booze will scare them back in, you know? So, you got intellectual hesitation over the G words. If you're a real alcoholic, we don't have to worry about scaring them away. They'll be back. Here's the summary. Do you eat because you're like affected just by overeating or certain foods or bulimia, right? That's a great consideration. Do you believe the only relief to your physical allergies to binge foods is entire abstinence? And I made a note of this. By the way, those of you who think abstinence is an OA term, it's an AA term. And I read one of the things I did before the workshop was to reread Roseanne's well-written book, which is a history of our program, our fellowship. And she talks about, she heard this AA speaker talking about abstinence from alcohol, and she thought that was a great name for what the drunks call sobriety, we call abstinence. But it's a big book term first. It's all in the book. I'm 32 years on this thing, been all over the world in the program, in OA and AA, including 4 years in Paris. It's all in the big book. Trust me. It's all there. Are you overeating food to overcome a craving beyond your mental control? Okay? This is a consideration, a first step consideration. You get the picture? It's you turn the statements into questions. You got the sponsor sitting in front of you. Okay? What is an obsession? An idea or thought that continually preoccupies or intrudes upon a person's mind. The book thumpers say it's an idea that when it comes in will drive out all other ideas, even sane or logical ones. When you know that the only thing that's going to fix you is a gallon of Haagen-Dazs, you're in the grips of the obsession. And all the memory that what your last binge did to you, how much weight you gained or what happened or the doctor's warning about diabetes, every sane thought you have will be driven out of your mind. This is called, in AA terms, alcoholic insanity, in OA terms, compulsive overeater insanity.
And what pages are
these? Well, these are, this one is from page 3, paragraph 2, line 1, page 8, paragraph 1, line 2. This was from a definition from, this is a 1934 dictionary. You know, I want to find out the words the way Bert was using it. And they're much better ones than this one. It's an old fucking wagon. But, you know, basically, I'm anal about this shit. So, you know, if I find something that sounds questionable, I will check it out on the AA History Lovers website, of which I am a member. Let's see. Do I realize that the main problem centers in your mind, not in your body? Now, we're already in step 2. Okay? A little bit in step 2. Because if you know that you can't touch ice cream, you just wouldn't eat ice cream again, right? If you were sane, beautiful comment. So the root problem is in your mind. What the hell is it that thinks this time, somehow, some way, it's not going to set me off again? I gained and lost 80 pounds 3 times. I'm running 12 miles a day in Miami heat. I go up north. I'm running 12 miles a day in snowstorms. This time, I'll be able to run it off. This time, I'll be able to keep it off. This time, I won't want to eat. This time, I'll find a magic diet. That's insanity. Somehow, I'll pursue it to the gates of insanity or death. Listen to Harlan's tape, and you'll hear a real hopeless variety of compulsive overeating. Here's some more considerations. Does this malady of the mind have a real hold on me, and was I baffled? They love that term in the first edition, baffled. You know, Bill Dodson's sitting there, the man on the bed, A, number 3, Dr. Bob and Bill come to him. Bob's got about 2 weeks. Sobriety Bill's got about 6 months and 2 weeks. Or whatever it was after his relapse at the AMA convention. And he says, you know, guys, I love you guys. You drank like I did. I relate to you. You're my kind of guys. He says, but it's no use, he says. I've been in this hospital 6 times, and his story's in the book, 6 times in the last 4 months, whatever it is, I forget. Twice I got drunk on the way home from the hospital, he says. I don't get it. He says, you guys come to me at 7 in the morning. By 9 in the morning, if I get out of here, I'm going to be boiled as an owl. That's the only term in the big book that I'd never heard before. I never had to use a dictionary to read the big book. I was a lit major. But I never heard the term boiled as an owl before. I have to admit that. That was a stumper. But it's an old 30s term. I heard Clarence Snyder use it on his tape. That it's an old term for getting loaded. So these are more considerations. Were you unable at certain times to bring into your mind with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of either a week or a month ago? Are you without defense against the next compulsive bite? This is a great consideration, okay? You still think always a support group, a self-help group, unsupervised group 30? Or, as certain of us, certainly Harlan and myself, have you placed yourself beyond human aid? This is a spiritual program. This ain't a support group. You're beyond human aid. That's some of the information you're getting in steps 1 and 2 here. Now, why do we have the mental obsession? And this is where we finally get to the spiritual malady. It's all about you're separated from God, as Chuck Chamberlain used to say. All addicts have this problem. They think they're going to fill it with food, alcohol, drugs, sex, money, whatever their trip is. This is the reflection in page 52 of the Agnostics, the famous bedevilments. I used to call it the generic drunkologue, because no matter what the details were, underneath it all is the spiritual malady. That's why the base of the triangle has to be spiritual. I read this almost every time I'm asked to speak in a meeting, when I'm asked to speak from the book. We're having trouble with personal relationships. I literally remember 1978, before I came on the program, saying, you know, I got enough friends, there's as much trouble as there, I don't want any new ones. The ones I got are enough. We couldn't control our emotional natures. My brother's nickname for me was Extremo. We were a prey to misery and depression. I thought it was normal. Life's a bitch and then you die. We couldn't make a living. I was unemployable. I was still in the booze and the food wasn't helping. We had a feeling of uselessness. I was useless. We were full of fear. I had 15 loaded guns in the apartment when I hit bottom. I was a paranoid nut. Used to go in blackouts, shoot up my apartment. wake up, there'd be pizza pie crusts and beer cans, you know, because I'm a compulsive overeater too, so the pizza was always there. We were full of fear, big time. My father once said to me, he's looking at me and goes, I'll never forget this, it was like 7 years before I hit the program, he goes, oh, we pull up a stoplight in Miami, a pistol slides out from under the seat of my car. He goes, what's that? I go, a gun. He goes, what's that for? And I go, you never know. So he looks at me. This is 7 years before I hit the program. He goes, boy, you got all these fears. You ought to take life one day at a time. He says this to me. Now, I don't know where he got it from. I don't think he was going to Al-Anon. 7 years later, when I come into the program, I see that banner in the Coral Gables where I go, wow, I remembered that. You know, you got all these fears. You got to take life one day. By the way, it's from the Bible. One day's problem is not for any man. It's from Jesus' teaching. Just throw that in there. We couldn't make it. Full of fear, we were unhappy. You know, I was miserable. I was dying then. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. I could be of help to myself. My apartment was full of bullet holes, pizza crusts, and beer cans. And guns. I like guns. Was not a basic solution these bedevilments? All right, this is a consideration. Don't you think a basic solution to problems like this is more important than the newsreel, the lunar flight, or who's playing in the Super Bowl? I do, because I'm dying, okay? These are considerations about the spiritual malady. Ask yourself, have you experienced these bedevilments or feelings about your life? Have you been able to solve these issues? If you can't solve this on your own power, then you're not the kind of people the big book was written for, first edition level, compulsive overeaters, Arlen's one, first edition level. Listen to this. Answer this question for yourself. Did your own human resources marshaled by the will, were they sufficient, or had they failed utterly? Did your human resources, is that enough to stop you from eating, to get the weight off, to keep it off? And get rid of these bedevilments from your life to make you happy, fulfilled, useful, to settle your emotional life, to settle your relationship life, to help you make a living? Did your own resources fail you or not? Now, some people come in at different levels of dysfunction. Some still have jobs, families even. Even Roseanne, she still had a husband who loved her, and I can't remember if she had a job. She had kids, young kids. I was a non-functioning first edition level guy. Clarence Snyder was living in abandoned houses for 3 years. He was unemployed for 5 years. He was drinking 8 cents a pint denatured alcohol during Prohibition. First edition level. I was that way. People are coming in at various stages of repair and disrepair. Some of us haven't lost everything. Harlem was dying from compulsive overeating. I don't think your financial life was doing too well either. Yeah, right. Yeah, in the toilet. Mine was. I was unable to make a living. I was useless. I was paranoid. I was shooting bullet holes in the apartment, went in the blackout, shooting up my apartment. I don't know where that came from. It seemed like a good idea at the time. All right. This is a great consideration. Do you believe frothy emotional appeal for you to stop eating will suffice? Your mother's telling you. My mother said, why are you killing yourself with booze and cigarettes? She didn't say food because she's a compulsive overeater. You see, but your parents or loved one might say, why are you eating yourself to death? The doctor told you, you got to quit, you're going to die. Okay? Or do you believe that the message to interest and hold, you must have depth and weight? Okay? Now, the book's message has depth and weight. It's scary, you're doomed, but it has depth and weight. There is a way out. There is a solution. I have to turn in all things to the Father of Light, says Bill. It's a condition. It's a must. By the way, I mentioned this in the side. It's because it's kind of humorous. It's only a dilemma for a compulsive overeater or an alcoholic or an addict. Not for the same. If somebody told you, now pancreatic cancer, I think there's two forms. One's a little more aggressive than the other. But you're basically dead within 1 year, 3 years. I knew a guy in AA made it 10 years. I've never met anybody who made it that long. I substituted for a teacher in LA, and she made it 3 years. I took over her classes. If you had pancreatic cancer and you went to five doctors and they all told you the same thing, you're a dead man walking, make out your will, blah, 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 blah. It's like they used to do with AIDS in the 80s when they first came out with it. I mean, this gay guy was going to meetings up in Marin. He was a good guy. I can't even remember his name now. But the doctor, when he got diagnosed, well, doctor, what should I do? Go home and make out your will. That was back in the 80s. Well, that was a little bit harsh, but what can they do? You diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and they said, you're a dead man walking. I'm sorry, and it's confirmed by every doctor. Except for these crazy people over here. There's 100 of them. Now, look, you don't want to get involved with them. What are you talking about? Well, okay, they seem to not die of pancreatic cancer, but they get down on their knees, they pray, they talk about a higher power, they make confessions, they make amends, and they go around helping people. But you don't want to talk to them. Well, they're surviving, of course, but it's unscientific. Okay? You should die like the rest of the people with pancreatic cancer. If you can get out of it, you know where they're going. It's Club Med. It's full of food. You know what's going to happen. You're going to see your ex-girlfriend there. Last time this happened, you binged. Why don't you just hang tight? We're going to go to an OA conference this weekend. Don't tell me what to do. You know? You see, this is a mental disease and a spiritual disease. It's more than just a physical disease. Now, some of you, this is a consideration for you, may think you can do without spiritual help. If so, you probably wouldn't be here, and you certainly wouldn't be asking me to sponsor you, because everybody knows where I'm coming from. Well, let me show you where I'm coming from. I got my thing here. I hope I didn't miss up the plate. You know, I got my speaker outfit on. This is a replica of the second edition dust jacket. So people know where I'm coming from because I'm always saying things in the memes like Genie B, you know? Programs in the literature, opinions in the memes. They don't like me. Okay? So these are actually step one and step two. More about compulsive overeating, more considerations. What are we doing for time? When does this thing break up? Noon? All right, I'm willing to keep going, but if you guys need to take your little breaks, go ahead. These are more considerations. I don't think I want to read them all. I'm just showing you that where they are in the book, and the method here is turning the statements into questions. I was planning to get through maybe... Yes? I said I would email it to you. Okay, there's my email. I will attach it to an email in Microsoft Word format, and if you have Microsoft Word, it shouldn't be a problem. Or, if you want, Sherman gave me some of his books. I don't make any money off of it, but what this book is, this step guide's about, is he takes the statements and turns them into questions. See? Yeah. He told me that there's a lot of OAs in San Diego using this. The Big Book Awakening. Dan S.
How can
we
get it?
You get it? Go to www.bigbookawakeningonline. TheGayWalker.com is also a website. They're about $7, I think. Bigbookawakening.com. Bigbookawakening.com. Do I have a marker? Do I have a pen? They told me I'd have all these things. They told me I'd have speakers to play the tapes. They lied. They're liars, cheaters, and thieves. www.bigbookawakening.com. Also the jaywalker.com. I don't know if he still has that one though. He's got inventory formats, and it's all based on the big. These guys are, trust me, these guys are fanatics. I mean, I scare them because I say stuff that's not in the book. That's not in the book. Well, God has disclosed more than me. Tough shit. I'm serving longer than all you assholes. All right. See, here, you got a statement in the book, page 21, paragraph 1, line 3. Then at some stage of your eating, you lose control of the amount you ate once you started to eat. So you turn the statements into questions. I'm not going to go through every one, but I'm hoping you get the gist of what's going on here. So I'm sitting there. I use his book as a checklist, is what I do, to make sure I haven't missed any important questions. I'm qualifying the sponsor, taking him through step one, step two. Are you a real compulsive overeater? Are you of the hopeless kind? Are you doomed? Have your own resources marshaled by the will proved insufficient? You see? And I use his booklet as a checklist. It's almost like a pilot's checklist. When they take off, they want to make sure they covered everything. Hydraulic pressure, brake pressure, fuel lines. I want to make sure I haven't missed any important questions. He's got writing in there, I don't know. I use it. It's an aid. These things are aids. You can use the book just by yourself, but it's a good method. If it helps you, I highly recommend it. Dan's a good guy, too. He's not making much money off of this stuff, I don't think. He originally did it as an aid to sponsees. Here's some great considerations. Do you believe that to stop compulsive overeating, there must be no reservation or any kind, or lurking notion that someday you will be immune to binge foods or sugar or the urge to overeat? Do you have lurking reservations? That's a crucial question. Because if you're harboring lurking reservations that you can be immune to this someday, you're liable to try it. That's one of the real scary considerations. These are important ones. That's why I bolded them. On your own willpower, can you stay stopped or on the same food plan? Can you stay stopped on a non-spiritual basis? Have you lost the power to choose whether or not you will overeat? That's a crucial question for you to decide, not for me. Okay, do you understand, except the fact that having a compulsive overeat is mine, the time and place will come again. When relying, oh, this is spelled wrong, when relying on your own power, you will overeat again. Okay? Do you realize that? When you, according to the book, remember I said the book's going to inform and comfort you? Well, here's some information. If you're a real compulsive overeater, someday, sometime, there will come the insanity that you can eat again. And if you are relying on your own power, you're not going to be able to resist it. That's some scary information. You're doomed. Do you believe, this is all first and second step stuff, that at certain times you will have no mental effective defense against the first compulsive bite? Do you believe, now this is a tricky one. Do you believe that no human being can provide such a defense? Now we all are taught, make outreach calls, go to your home group, this or that, your sponsor, you know. It's an interesting question. But I can tell you what happened to me 7 years into this without the book. Or, I mean, I liked the book on my own, but with a first sponsor that wasn't following it. I wasn't eating and I wasn't drinking, but I was dying spiritually. Meeting makers make, I was going to 2 meetings a day. I was active in AA, active in OA. I started the biggest meeting in Marin County on a Saturday morning. I don't think they're in the same, they don't know who I am now, but I started it. Started a men's group up there. I don't think that one survived. I was active, man. I was going to meetings, this, that, and everything. But I was dying. Okay, so you may not pick up the first bite, but you are going to be a mess spiritually. Okay, and you may pick up the first bite. My sponsor told me, he says, man, that's the alcohol calling out for you. 7 years sober. I never met anybody 7 years sober so unhappy before. He says, the alcohol is calling out for you, buddy. It's going to be homicide, suicide, or the nut house, or you're going to pick up a drink, in which case, homicide, suicide, or nut house. It's called a lose-lose situation. Tell the old Philippines and Bali stories. Oh, yeah, I'm in Bali, Indonesia. I'm in the Philippines. I was going to an AA conference. There's no old way there. But I got checked with the internationals. I got a loaner in Manila. I called her up from Angeles City. I was going up to Manila anyway for some medical stuff, actually. And I met her, and I was carrying a message to her. The book says that God will give me the power to create the fellowship I crave. I am not meeting dependent, but this program has never been meant to be done in isolation. There's a big difference between being meeting dependent and realizing that you need other people as part of your spiritual life. This has always been we. Evie's message, which I didn't get a chance to play because they lied to me, was that quit this living alone. Join the Oxford group at that time. It wasn't AA. I can't stay absent in AA alone. I got to be in OA with my people. You understand me, okay? I never met a pizza pie I didn't like, you know. So it's never meant to be done alone. But I'm not meeting dependent. But the higher power gives me the power to create the fellowship I crave. I go to Bali, Indonesia. There was an Australian woman there, a bit obese. She was in business. And I couldn't find any OA contacts. There was AA. But somebody in the program, an Australian AA, hooked me up with this woman. And she's over there in business, but she was interested in this because she was obese. And I'm sitting there, one guy telling her my story, explaining the program, talking about the book. okay? And that's the way the whole thing started. Little salesmen would go out and they'd be in some town. There was no AA meetings. At the time the book was written, and it's mentioned in there, there wasn't even AA yet. There was still going to Oxford group meetings. But it says little groups of twos and threes are going out. One man with this book in his hand can create the fellowship he craves. She kept me asking him. I don't really think she knew what the hell I was talking about, frankly. She seemed to be concerned about getting her fabrics for her garment business. You know, they go to Indonesia and have their ship made up. Labor's cheap. So, but she kept me asking it, you know, because I'm one man with a book in my hand, and I will create the fellowship I crave. And that's what Bill realized, that moment in the Mayflower Hotel when he realized, and Ray O'Keefe's got a great, if you ever get a chance to listen to Ray O'Keefe, he's one of the greatest AA speakers I've ever lived. He's dead now, but for almost 40 years. But Bill realizes in that hotel lobby, he's got to talk to another drunk to stay sober. And Ray O'Keefe's rather witty quip, he was famous for, he said, well, I guess if you got God in your room, that's good for about 6 months of sobriety. After that, you better talk to another drunk. You know, Bill had God in his room in the hospital. But 6 months later, his stock deal goes bad, and he's, well, the bar is, you know, I'm lonely. Maybe I'll go have a ginger ale. Right. Maybe you'll go into the ice cream parlor and have a diet soda. Right. Okay? Then he says, when he says no, I'm going to call the church director. If you look at his story, people over, he's thanked God for restoring the sanity. See, he had a spiritual awakening. He's been restored to sanity. He recoils as if from a hot flame. He realized in that moment of sanity he's got to talk to another drunk. I'm in Indonesia with no OA meetings. I wasn't having particularly problems, but I knew from my recovery that's important for me to try and hook up with another compulsive overeater. And I was able to do that, and she kept me asking it. And I don't think I had any effect. I mean, who knows? Maybe she joined OA when she went back to Australia. Anyway, session two, we were supposed to have a break, but I am not doing it. You guys, you know, feel free if you need to bail out, if you want to listen to some panels or whatever. I'm just giving you the real stuff. You can go listen to them if you want. Thank you, love. Stretch, by all means stretch, have some water, go to the bathroom, do whatever you need to do. Chapter 4, step 2, chapter to the agnostics. These are considerations. Are you insane? What does the book mean when it uses the term insanity? What is compulsive overeating or alcoholic insanity versus psychosis? Oh, this is great. I'm going to talk about this a little. What's the craziest thing you've ever done? Have you ever continued to put your hand on a hot stove? Can you dig the story of the jaywalker in the midway? Now, let me tell you about this. When the book uses the term insanity, it doesn't mean you're hearing Martian messages from the fillings in your teeth, or that you're, you know, seeing green people on the street and you got to shoot them to defend yourself. They're talking about the insanity of the first compulsive bite. They're talking about alcoholic insanity for the other program. They're not talking about psychosis. The idea that I can safely eat ice cream, you know, or whatever your binge food is, sugar, whatever, or if you're bulimic, put your finger down your throat and throw up, and I'll just do it this time, I'll get back to the program on Monday. It's, you know, you don't get to choose what happens, or I don't, I'll keep it on me. I don't get to choose what happens when I mess around with my binge foods. I might think, I can handle it, but the disease has other plans for us. The famous 1930s quasi-religious tract prose, King Alcohol, we were shivering denizens of his realm, you know. That's Bill. Alcohol was our master, says Bill. Food wasn't my master, as a compulsive overeater. I am hearing voices from my phone. This is great, though. What's the craziest thing you've ever done regarding this disease? Now, this comes from Don Pritz, who's Joe Hawk's sponsor. Joe Hawk does a year in Michigan State Pen for writing checks. He's an alcoholic and a drug abuser. And he's on probation. He gets out. And his parole officer says, if we catch you in any bars drinking or associating with known drug users, you're violating your parole. He walks out of his parole office, across the street to a bar. Okay? So when his sponsors take him through the steps, doing what I'm talking about, turning the statements into questions, what's the craziest thing you've ever done? He thought, well, I'm writing checks, crashing cars, getting in fights, aren't this? He says, no, you talk about the stuff you did drunk? Oh, yeah, you know, I committed an armed robbery. I was drinking. So that's not the craziest thing. The craziest thing you ever did, you did stone cold sober, which is you picked up another drink. Okay? The craziest thing, if you're a real compulsive overeater, the craziest thing you're ever going to do is you're going to pick up a pizza or ice cream or whatever your trip is, or, you know, cheesecake, you know. That's the craziest thing you're ever going to do. And you're going to do it stone cold abstinent. If you drift away from the program, if you stop this, if you don't work the steps, if you don't help others. The craziest thing you're going to do abstinent, which is to take the first compulsive bite. Okay? It's insanity for me to pick up a drink or pick up ice cream or something. It's insanity. I mean, Jesus Christ. I've had enough of that. You know, next time it'll be over 300 pounds. Your behavior as absurdly incomprehensible with respect to the first compulsive bite as that of an individual with a passion for, say, jaywalking? Okay? This is the famous story in the book. Okay? He gets a thrill of skipping in front of fast-moving vehicles. I don't want to read the whole story to him. Jim's story. We finally, the AA History Lovers website, finally ID'd him. His name is Harlan Spencer. He was a car salesman. His story is about he walks into a bar and thinks if he only puts whiskey and milk, it's not going to hurt him this time. Insanity. Stone cold sober when he did it. Okay? That's the craziest thing he ever did. It's not when he rode the car in a blackout, drunk. The craziest thing he did was walk into a bar stone cold sober and think that if he puts alcohol in a glass of milk, it won't hurt him. If you walk into a pizza parlor and think, well, I'll just have the one without extra cheese. You name your poison. I'm not here to tell you. Fred story, Harry Brick. See, I know who these guys are. This is interesting. The insanity of the first compulsive bite can come to us when we don't have a resentment. Jim had a little argument with his boss. He used to own the dealership. Now he's working as a salesman. Okay, so he had a little bit of a resentment going there, you know. But if you read Fred's story in the big book, there wasn't a cloud on the horizon. He had a great day. He presented some accounting evidence. It was a success. All goes well. And he walks across a hotel dining room, and suddenly the idea comes to him and said, a couple of cocktails with dinner, that won't hurt me. So the insanity can take the form of drinking at somebody with a resentment. It can take the form of the mental blank spot. Like, where the hell that? Why am I drinking again? Why am I eating again? Why did I order ice cream? You know, and my buddy Elliot, too, he forgot he was an alcoholic. He was at a party. He was an artist. And he had a party, and he went on. They said, we're running out of beer and wine. They sent him to the liquor store to buy beer and wine with another guy. He's driving. He's not drinking. He had a few years in AA at the time. But he drifted away from meetings, see? He drifted away from his people. Well, the solution is, see, the meetings keep my eye on the prize. He didn't drink. They bought the booze for the party. But the guy's drinking a bottle of wine in the car as they're going on the beer run for the party. Elliot's the driver, the designated driver, not drinking. They come back to the party. The guy put the wine bottle under the passenger seat. They take the beer and the wine up to the party. Elliot didn't drink that night. The next morning, he's driving on an errand. The bottle rolls out from the passenger side. He was, you know, doing his thing during the day. He wasn't thinking about drinking. Picks up the bottle and just took it. He forgot he was an alcoholic. So the insanity can come to you through spiritual dislocation, the bedevilments, resentment, the number one offender, fear, guilt, running from your problems. It can come through you through a mental blank spot, not a cloud in the horizon, not a problem in the world. Everything's going well. It can come through, you can forget you're a compulsive overeater. I don't need those meetings anymore. I got it handled. But that's insanity, okay? This is the talk about insanity. We were advised to admit that our justification for a spree of binge was insanely insufficient in light of what happened, etc., etc. We saw that we began to eat compulsively, overeat deliberately instead of casually. There's little. Turn the statement into question. Do you have any serious or effective thought or period of premeditation of what the consequences were the last time you ate ice cream? No, I thought I could handle it this time. you know. Yeah. Or you don't care. You just don't give a shit. Yeah. People who are agnostic are making heavy going of it. They seem to want to spend money on therapists and antidepressants. I could never see that. Are you confused and baffled by the seeming futility of existence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, this goes into step two. Your higher power is your business. And you can just ask these yourself what these terms mean to you. And you can define your own higher power. God as you understand him. And if in the books, you know what I call my higher power? God as I don't understand him. And it works for me fine. I do use the G word. I pray on my knees. I don't have to define or comprehend that which is God. I was in a detox with 32 years ago. A, people put me in there because they thought I was going to have a convulsion in the A clubhouse. I'm a real alcoholic, first edition level. For me to drink is to die. Are you a real compulsive overeater? For you to overeat is to die? I know he is. I heard his story. I am. That's up to you to diagnose. But I'm in there with this priest, a Catholic priest and an Episcopal priest, two priests. And the book says it's impossible to define or comprehend that which is God. Well, if you ask them, they'll tell you what it is. They'll define it. They'll come. He's, you know, Jesus the Father, Son, the Holy Ghost, the one universal apostolic Roman. All right, Father, well, what are you doing here in the bathrobe just like me then? If you know who God is. The answer to the question, I'm not trying to be a wise ass. I don't mean to offend anybody who's a member of a faith. And the book actually says we favor such reconnections. Most of us, it says. Well, I'm one of the non-most. I'm not one of them. But I'm not trying to offend anybody. What I'm getting is this. Their problem is not, and your problem, if you're, and my problem, is not that who's got the best definition or comprehension of God. That's what we let the theologies and the religions do. If you're a real compulsive overeater like I am, your problem is not who's got the best comprehension or definition of God. Your problem is the same as my problem, is the same as what the book says our problem is. Lack of power. That is our dilemma. You get it? What's the use of knowing who God is if I can't access the power? These priests are in a goddamn detox with me because they can't access the power. And this book gives you a method to remove the obstacles, I'm using language from the book, that block me from this power. You see? So it's not about who's got God figured out. You stay with your church. The book recommends it. Be quick to see where religious people are right. I am quick to see where religious people are right. I'm also quick to see where they're wrong. Now, this is one of the things. It's a great line. Please, we beg of you, lay aside prejudice even against organized religion. The book is humble. If you read the black words in the blue book, you're going to find, pardon me? Just laughed? Why? The black words in the blue book. Well, it's a blue book and the words are black. That's why I say these things on white pages. If you read the black words in the blue book, you're going to find the book is not arrogant. Now, you might find a book from, look, you stupid bastard, you're doing it wrong, you're wrong. Just tell them to piss off. You know? You never talk down to a compulsive reader, says. But if you read the black words in the blue book, the book is humble. We beg of you to lay aside prejudice. Excuse me, I get emotional. I'm not giving public displays of emotion, but the book saved my life. We beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. We beg of you. The book is not arrogant. The book is humble. It, you know, just take these terms, spiritual terms home and honestly ask them what they mean to you. It doesn't say you got to believe what we got to believe. This is so powerful, really. There's the line from page 46. It's impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend the power which is God. These priests could, and they're in the same damn drunk tank as me 32 years ago. Lack of power. More considerations. You know, your higher power doesn't have to be a Judeo-Christian, doesn't have to be up in heaven, doesn't have to be the heavenly. If you read Bob's story, it's really funny. He goes from a guy where he says, I will never darken the doors of the church again. And at the end of his story, he said, your heavenly father will never let you down. You know, I swear to God, read the story, Dr. Bob. And he was a churchgoer. Okay. And I don't know why I get emotional, but I do. Most people don't get emotional over a book. You know, probably better listen than some of these women I used to obsess on. But anyway, you know, he goes from a guy, he's going from a guy who would never darken the doors of a church again. He would carry the Bible around. It was the good book and the big book. And he became a churchgoer. And this program came from the Oxford Blues, came from this primitive Christian fellowship thing they were trying to emulate. And get the handouts, by the way. It tells you, it all started with a food fight. I forgot to even tell you this. But, you know, first things first. Where do you think that's from? From nowhere? Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all else will be added unto you. It's all from the spiritual principles these guys learn. I forgot to talk about this. And it's OA, or AA, started with a food fight. If you guys don't know this, I know this stuff because I'm anal. This guy, Frank Bookman, and it's in these handouts. It was all about this little boys' home, this hospice he started. And one of the ways he'd attract guys to this hospice so he could convert them to Christianity, he was a Lutheran, was he'd serve them great meals. And they were all slum kids from Philadelphia. So some of them weren't, you know, they had alcoholic fathers, they weren't eating right at home. And he'd get big pancakes and eggs. And so he'd get them into this boys' home. And they had a cutback. They had an economic turndown. And the board of directors said, well, we're going to have to cut back on the food portions. And Frank Buffman, so it was an argument over who's paying the tab of the food anyway. But it started in a food fight. And he says, this is horrible. This is Oliver Twist. And here's a guy who wasn't an alcoholic, and listen, this is an article, The Apology That Launched a Million Amends. Resentment consumed him. His family despaired that he might not come to his senses. This guy wanted to be a big shot minister and convert people. Norman Vincent Peale, Dwight Moody, these were some of the big people, Emmett Fox in these days. But he found something funny. He was consumed by resentment and nobody wanted what he had. Nobody was going to be converted. He was so pissed off he left the country. He went to England. And there he saw a Salvation Army preacher, a woman, I believe, in Keswick, England. And he saw the cross in back of her. And all he could see, he had like a spiritual experience, he just saw the eye of the cross, not the cross beam, but the vertical post. And it suddenly hit him that the problem was with me. I can't convert people because I'm effed up with resentments. It got to him that, you know, the problem was in him. And he wrote letters of amends, it's in his handout, to the board of directors, and the resentment went away. He said something like, and if you look in the book, it says, we confess our former ill feelings and express our regret. It's in the chapter on making amends to people we hate. When he realized, he said something like, it's unchristian of me to harbor such feelings. Jesus said, judge not, lest you be judged. And he realized he was judging these people, harboring these feelings, and he was killing them, and he couldn't convert anybody. And by making that amends, that's how the Oxford Group started. It started in a food fight. This whole damn thing started in a fight over, at least he was picking up the tab of the food. So, if you want to know if you can take steps two, here it is, right here, page 47. Ask yourself right now. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man or woman can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. Bill has given the two stylistic metaphors in his writings. One is the gardening thing. His roots grasp new soil. Selfishness is the root of our problems. And the other is the architectural thing. The keystone, the cornerstone is in place. I don't know where he got the architectural stuff from or the gardening, but he just likes to talk like that. Here's more, you know, we're building an arch, page 75. Are the stones in place, you know? I don't know where. It must have been. Yeah, maybe it was. Yeah, was it biblical? See, I don't know. Oh, okay. Yeah, you guys were. Okay, cool. I read the New Testament like twice, but I don't remember that one. Obviously, I wasn't a good enough student of the New Testament. I like the New Testament a lot. because I had a spiritual awakening, I can read spiritual literature from almost any faith and get something out of it now, see, because I've had a spiritual awakening. I remember Carlos Castaneda where he's talking about the rabbit in the trap, and don't you see that your entire life has been like this, you know, you've been trapped. And he's doing a fourth and fifth step with a guy. Don Juan's is helping Carlos with his fourth and fifth step, you see. So I can appreciate all this stuff now because I've had a spiritual awakening. The guarding metaphor and the architectural metaphor. Can you use your group as a higher power? Now this is where it gets tricky. Bill says in the 12 and 12, yes. He says the whole thing with the agnostics is they're trying to get it through the head. If there's one thing I can suggest to you, you know, it's in the book. The bridge of reasoning is only going to take you so far. Stop trying to just. You know what he says in the 12th room? Relax, take it easy, quit the debating society. Relax. You like OA, you like having a food sponsor, you like having a food plan, you like the meetings, you like the being able to talk about your feelings, you like the fellowship. That's your higher power for now. Go with it. But stay open. Stay open. And just be aware that the book does say no human power. But, you know, you feel the power here. And when we go to these meetings and hear these stories of degradation and then rebirth and regeneration, they're powerful and they attract us. And we say, well, we want this power, whatever the hell it is. So if you, Bill says it's fine to start with your group. I go to meetings in Santa Monica with book thumpers. They think I'm too liberal. You know, these guys are fanatics. Anyway, look at this from the 12 and 12. Here is a very large group of people who have solved their food compulsive overeating problem. You can start with that. The important thing is to ask yourself whether this higher power makes sense to you. Now, if you're going to be group dependent, be aware of the limitations of that. If you haven't done all these steps, it's not about who's got the best higher power. What it's about is, do I have enough power to go on to the next step? I left an amend off my first inventory because I didn't have enough third step in me. So my fourth step was flawed. Because I left that amend off my inventory, I never got my career back. I was in graduate school for literature. The book says, with us, material progress always follows spiritual progress. With us, it is like that, it says. It's in the book. I got it here somewhere. And I'm the best example that you could ever see. At some of these we balk. You want to know what a balker looks like? Me. Progress, not perfection. You want to know what an imperfect? Me. Okay? We're not saints. You're looking at one. Okay? Nobody's going to do this perfectly, but it's not about who's got the... It's do you have enough power to go on to the next step and do it? Every step reconfirms the previous step. If I do that, and I've done this with a guy in OA... Say the prayer, hold the hands, do the third step on the knees, right out of the book, give him the fourth step inventory, last time I ever saw him. Okay? The only way I know he's done a third step is if he shows up with his fourth step and follows direction. The only way I know he's done a proper fourth step is when I'm listening to his fifth step. All right, is there something you haven't been telling me? Is there some secret that, you know... And then, you know, a week later, well, I didn't want to mention this. It's not that, but let's hear it, you know. By doing a proper fifth step, I know he's done a thorough fourth step. I don't want to go into this too much now because it's more, it will be revealed in this. By the way, those are the two most misquoted slogans in 12-step fellowships. Don't leave now. You're going to hear the two most misquoted slogans in 12-step fellowships. Now's not the time. Give me a minute. Two more minutes, that's all I have?
Yeah.
Oh, well, then I'm going to get it in before I forget. Well, look, leaving off the term paper story. I left that term paper amendment off. Let me tell you what the two most misquoted slogans are. One of them is more will be revealed. It does not say that in any literature, OA area. God will disclose more to you and to us is what it says. So who do you think twisted that one? Could it possibly be the agnostics? The medicated agnostics, as I call them? The other one is newcomers are the most important person in the room. Well, to be brutally honest with you, and I got 32 years, every OA meeting I ever been at, the most important person in the room is me, and next to me is the coffee maker. And we ain't got coffee in this meeting. It does not say that. What it actually says is frequent contact with newcomers and each other is the bright spot in our lives. So welcome, bright spots. We're glad to have you here. You're a bright spot in the room. Okay, I think we're going to have to quit, right?
Let's hear your story.
Oh, which one was it, about the amend? Well, I stole a term paper from a University of Florida library. I smuggled out of, and I turned it in turned it in Miami, and I knew that I'd done wrong, and I left it off my inventory. Now, who do you hurt when you cheat on a test?
Yourself.
So the proper amend would not have been go to the professor and get thrown out of school. The proper amend would have been to return the thing to the University of Florida and to take the course over and do the work and learn what I was supposed to learn. But I didn't have good sponsorship, and I didn't have a good third step in place at the time. And I never made that amend and never went back to that graduate program. And it changed the whole course of my life. Now, I've always been taken care of, and I got no complaints. And our problems are of our own making. God didn't do it to us. I'm a real example of that. I beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. I beg of you, okay? And the book is humble. It is not, excuse me, I get emotional. Actually, I didn't get emotional talking about a book. It's weird. Anyway, it's all in here. I got to stop now, right? All right, so what should I should mark something here to make story of the first sponsor. I already talked about him a little bit. I'm going to put first session. Yeah, all right, first session. End.
Is there more of this later?
Are you kidding? We're only on step two. Oh, yeah. I mean, as long as they will let me talk, I will talk. And if they let me talk more, I would have talked more. If they let me talk into tomorrow, I would be talking into tomorrow. My biggest complaint in the world is they never gave me enough time. That's why I started the lighted candle meetings. I started the lighted candle meetings out of resentment that OA would never give me enough time to tell my story. And this is how God uses people. Vanity, ego, pride, narcissism, you call it what you want. We got that meeting started. We started taping the speaker. John Kay ran with it. Got them on the website. Now people all over the world are listening to those tapes. That meeting started because of a resentment for me. God will take your good and your bad. I'm going to get into that when we talk about the six and seven steps. Go and eat no more, my children. So what happens? Lunch or what do we do? All right.